Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Okay, thank you very much, and hello everyone, and welcome to the kickoff of the HITECH Annual Report Work Group. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are excited that you're joining us today, and we really appreciate the willingness and dedication of our work group. And on behalf of ONC, I would like to thank our co-chairs, Carolyn Peterson and Aaron Meary, for their ongoing support and for providing direction to this work group, and also thank Brett Oliver for continuing to provide his expertise. As with all HITECH meetings, we will have a public comment period towards the end of each meeting, and we welcome your comments then or via the public chat feature, which is available throughout this meeting. You can also submit your comments in writing to onc-hitech@slsolutionsllc.com. For the record, we have in attendance today Carolyn Peterson, Aaron Meary, and Brett Oliver. And now I would like to turn it over to our co-chairs to get us started. Carolyn, Aaron?
Sure. Well, welcome. And here we go again. This will be fun. Another fun, exciting year. Lots of good stuff going on. And I think given the focus on public health, a lot of our work from the previous years really will pay dividends, because we've been talking about this for some time and some of the items and issues there that are coming up. So this should be a fun year. I look forward to it. I don't know, Carolyn, anything you want to say real quick?
No, I just agree with you. It's hard to believe that we're already back working on the next annual report. The calendar says it's been 3.5 months since we wrapped up the last one, but it feels like last week. I'm really glad Aaron and Brett are here to help with this work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially feels like a week to Michelle. She's the only one not smiling.
Oh, but Michelle's a professional now. Her and her team are amazing at this, so it'll be another phenomenal work product. Another phenomenal work product. All right. So today, really, from the agenda perspective, we'll go through, obviously, the meeting schedule, talk about some lessons learned and parameters for the HITECH Annual Report FY21, some topics for the HITECH Annual Report FY21, public comment, and, of course, next steps and adjourned. So next slide, please. So status of FY20, obviously, we completed this. HITECH reviewed it, approved it. Went to the national coordinator, which was great. Mickey joined us, and or I should say rejoined ONC activities, and now as NC, and I think really it helped him get really going on that, and then he forwarded on to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and I think Carolyn, you got the same email I did from the Secretary of a thank you. I believe he read it, he really appreciated it, and it was very informative to him. So I think we learned a great lesson about a good annual report helps to orient very senior healthcare leaders quickly as to the opportunities and the positives. And I found that to be really, really reassuring, and it says a lot about the work the whole committee and HITECH as a whole did. Really appreciated that. Carolyn, anything you want to add to that?
No, it was really nice to be acknowledged, and hopefully we have set the stage for many years of really solid, useful annual reports.
All right. Totally agree. Next slide. All right. So meeting schedules, fast and furious of meetings here. All right. So we got obviously today, which is June 2nd. That's amazing. I can't believe the year is halfway done. It's crazy to me. We'll get another meeting on the 22nd, and then we will break for a good month with 4th of July and everything, so July 20th. Then we'll have the crosswalk of topics. In August, we're really going to refine that and work through that crosswalk and really start digging into the meat of things. And same thing, as it goes all the way down the stack, you can see the meetings. And a draft should be ready by November timeframe, so call it Thanksgiving-ish. We're going to HITECH for review in December, and then approval sometime January, February, and transmittal in the springtime. I'm sure interspersed here will be updates at the HITECH, what's going on, what awareness, FYIs, here's what we're looking at. And of course, if anything develops over the course of the year, particularly given the executive order around public health and others, we'll adapt, we'll adjust, and we'll keep going. I think this report will really be reflective of a good body of work of what the HITECH is working on and really focused on, everything from USCDI to standards development to everything. So I'm excited about that. Next slide. All right. So meeting schedule for full committees. Obviously, we're going to be giving the updates there in June and in July. So next week, we'll be kind of like, hey, we started this process again. July, of course, there as well, we'll be giving updates. September 9th, and November 10th. And of course, the approvals, right, review of the full report and approvals, January and February 22, which will be here before we know it. So it's exciting, and we should learn something from this process. So let's keep going. Next slide. All right, so let's talk about potential topics for the high-tech annual report. Next slide. All right, so first question for us is, are there any new lessons learned in development of annual report for FY20? I'll start, and Brett and Carolyn, I'm curious your thoughts too. I really enjoyed the stories, the short narrative that we put for every section. It kind of, as I've been told, it made it into English for folks that are not as techie as we are, or as versed in the nuances of the details. So I think that was a really good just addition, and it helped anchor the report. I don't know, but what the two of you think?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that was, if I've had one piece of feedback during my entire time on the high tech from multiple people, it was that piece. It just really made it readable and brought home the points. If it was nebulous to somebody that read the story, and it would, oh, okay, now I understand. I still may not understand the paragraph before it or after it, but I get that story and definitely see the need.
Yeah, I think that's an effective way of communicating and something we'd want to retain for the coming year.
All right. So, and the next question then is, what are some parameters to adjust for the development of the annual report for FY21? Sort of some sub-questions here. How long should it be? Should the format change? Now there's a body of work. Should, say, some items be referenced but not addressed? You know, should executive summary stand on its own more with landscape and gap analysis and appendices? Or you know, revise the format, that sort of thing. I personally, you know, I give a lot of credit to Michelle and to the ASELF team for figuring out how to summarize a really dense body of work of topics into something that was readable. I found last year's format with the executive pages up front, kind of the short story, I call it, you know, then the Cliff Notes version, and then the details behind it really easy to follow. The crosswalk made a lot of sense to me. And I liked how we set priorities of ranges to things, what's short-term, medium-term, long-term sort of thing. So I quite honestly have been in favor of adopting the same type of format for this year. It seemed easier to read, but I don't know what, Brett, what you think, or Carolyn, what you think.
I was just, when I read these questions yesterday or the day before, I thought, was there a problem with the format that we had before? You know, did we get some kind of feedback that it wasn't readable, et cetera, because, you know, this group, because we're so small, we going back and forth, and I felt like we modified things quite a bit over time. And so to me, there wasn't a big need for adjustments. But I was just curious if Michelle or you guys have gotten feedback about, oh, that was too long, or the format was tough, or is this just more standard procedure to go back through and make sure we don't want to refine?
Yeah, it's Michelle. I think it's both. I heard internal feedback at ONC during the review process that it's obviously lengthy, and they were seeing multiple versions of things, you know, many times, so it was a lot to read through in that phase. But I don't think I heard that comment about the final version. It was more like, is this process working for us? Is it a good use of resources going forward? But I didn't hear feedback that was negative about the final product. People were pleased with that. So I think it's more of a process question. Rather than did people not understand what was in the report. I did see when people commented from high-tech members that they mostly commented in the crosswalk section and didn't really parse through the rest of the report to find out where else their comment might impact, and that was left up to the team to figure out. So it did sort of imply to me that people aren't reading every word of it or just only wanted to comment once and didn't really want to comment multiple times. So it could be shorter, and I think it wouldn't hurt, you know, the report content if it was, but it also doesn't have to be. So that's what
I think that if it was meant to be a recap of what high tech had done, then maybe it wouldn't be so bad to try to specifically make it shorter. But given that we know that people use it as a reference year round, and have an interest in being able to refer to it when they see a news story or hear about legislation that's being prepared, I feel like it's useful in its comprehensiveness, and it also kind of helps frame what ONC does, which I think is probably good for the agency.
I think it's a good point, Carolyn. It also gives a lot of meat to the bone as to what is this federal committee doing, right? What are we working on? What are our priorities and what's the details behind it? And, you know, as new, you know, congressional leaders come on board or, you know, join various committees on the Hill, they're going to look at the line items and say, okay, what are we funding? What are you working on? As anybody would, right? Any leader, any good leader would ask that question, and it gives meat to the bone versus it just being a, you know, a very consolidated crosswalk item, right? Because we actually go into detail, which I think is important. These issues, unfortunately, aren't small. I mean, they are major, major issues for one of the largest, you know, segments of the United States economy. And so I kind of agree with you, Caroline. I don't think we can do it disservice by just keeping it light.
Yeah, I mean, not also that we should try to get into every possible topic we can think of. You know, I think we've done well for ourselves and for the task by looking at each thing individually and saying what's the depth that we need with this, where's the benefit coming from.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. Michelle, does that help? Does that help give kind of guidance on what we're thinking?
Yeah, it's very helpful, I think. It balances the perspectives. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I also see it the way Carolyn mentioned about even if the members are not deeply commenting on every section throughout, it is a reference. I myself have gone back into it, and other people have told me that they do throughout the year, and we often hand it to people who are new to the health IT world of, like, here's a good orientation of key issues. So I think it does serve that purpose.
That's a good point. That's a great point.
So I'm trying to be neutral here. I see both sides.
Yeah.
That, you know, shorter is good. I don't think it's less work, honestly, to make it shorter. It's editing can be harder than just writing a lot. So it's not, for me, about saving effort or work necessarily, although helping reviewers review it more quickly would be a nice feature. But if it is important material that needs to be treated with some depth, there's probably no way around some of that, at least.
Agreed. I'm just trying to get my head, like, how would we explain SDOH elements of US CDI version 2, right? Like, in a very high level, like, okay. I mean, you know, you got it. You got to go into detail. All right. So I think we have that answered then. Length, yeah, format, and we talked about all this. Okay. All right. So next slide then.
One thing before you go on, there's the last question about any changes to our tools that we're using before we start applying them, the topic list and the crosswalk document. Should we repurpose those from last year?
Yeah, I would repurpose the exact same tool. And it was easy for me to review and comment and send back. And as we collaborated and eventually got to the full document, I found it, I mean, it took me, you know, hour or two to go through the whole thing in redline and had different citations and stuff that I sent back to you. That was great. Brett or Carolyn?
I agree.
No. It worked well.
It worked well, Michelle. All right. Okay, so the potential topics for the high-tech annual report, please refer to the draft list of potential topics for FY21 for the annual report for FY21. Do we have that readily available? Can we pull that up? There we go. There we go. All right. Okay. Topics for consideration. Public health data systems. I have a feeling like there's like a yes and there's an exclamation of yes for answers on these ones. But yes. So let's see here. Do we want to talk about public health data systems? I'm going to guess yes.
Yeah. There's several actually in that category.
Yeah. So, you know, unable to deliver vaccine status for less patients, which is true. We had that problem here in Texas. Immunization is not up to date for data consumption. Payer, you know, vaccine monitoring for return to work. Improvement data normalization standardization. I mean, I think that has to be in the list. Okay. Yeah, so we're going to add that one. So next one is this public, and again, public health data systems. There should be an incentive to funding structure that aligns incentives for public health data sharing and the results in EHR incentive program without a corresponding public health incentive structure and funding model. This is from Arianne. So I get where he's coming from, right? That there needs to be some sort of cost sharing, revenue reimbursement, something to incentivize people to share. But I feel, this is just my personal feeling, but I'm really curious, Brett and Carolyn, what you think. This may be wading into different kinds of waters. It gets outside of our swim lane from a high tack, or am I misreading this? Because this could go a couple of directions as to like, well, you should be doing this anyways. Or it should be some, you know, CMS really looking at this, saying, is this, you know, a CMS item? I mean, what do you all think?
Yeah, it does seem to be out of our swim lane a little bit. I mean, the way I interpret it is we need meaningful use dollars for public health, their
right.
infrastructure, and because they weren't incentivized, they have outdated systems, which is true. I mean, Arian's right, but I'm not sure that's for us to decide or to recommend. I don't know. Carolyn, what do you think?
If I am thinking correctly, did I not recently, like within the last week, see an announcement about the current administration trying to move forward with some additional funding for public health at a very significant level?
Yeah, it was like $80 million for training, right? It was for training the public health, like, workforce of the future, I thought?
I was thinking there was something else that I saw, but maybe in any event, we could certainly frame a section like HITECH is aware that public health will be getting more funding for a number of different aspects, and these are the areas that we suggest some investments be made to facilitate interoperability with clinical systems, you know, and whatever else we think are the important goals. That would be within our purview, I think, without getting too political, you know, and perhaps it would help others who are involved in making those decisions.
That's true.
Especially if they're not health IT background.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Or it could also be referred over to one of the standards committees, right? So USCDI is maybe a data class or several data classes, right, that bake into as a common element that has to be exchanged. Because it's just case records, right? So, I mean, most of those data elements are coming over anyways in the note. So one theoretically could surmise it's just a regrouping and submitting it as an ECR, which not every major certified HIT vendor can do FHIR yet, which is bizarre to me, but that's the truth. So, I mean, we could also do it that way, right? Recommend this to be looked at for the data class or classes for consideration in a future USCDI version.
Is that something
did
that
we talk
would
about?
High tech comments on specifically. We could ask them what they think.
Yeah, we can ask. Yeah, we can just ask. I mean, I'm just trying to think of a way that we could have input on this that isn't our swim lane per se. It is important. It
did
is
talk
important.
Did we talk about electronic case reporting at all? You mentioned ECR, and that's a specific sort of infrastructure piece that's terrible, that you get someone like the CDC encouraging you to submit your cases electronically, and then your state can't accept them. You know, it's maddening. And so, I mean, that's a specific, I guess, tangent of what Arian was saying in terms of what was the state's incentive. I mean, even at state level, I don't know if Arian was even talking about more private companies, but that venture into the public health data swim lanes, but I don't know. Do we talk at all about electronic case reporting? Because that's a specific example of something that's not working now with public health, at least in certain areas. In my area, I can tell you that much.
I agree with you. Same here. I think we do in this crosswalk. I don't remember which line it is. I know we talked about case reporting a lot.
Okay.
So it's got to be in here somewhere. Okay. So what I'm hearing in the recommendation then for this item is we ask one of the technical committees, one of the technical FACAs, what they think. And is there room here to do something around this there? Maybe not so much on funding, but on standards development or some of that effect.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay. Carolyn?
Yep. Go for
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. All right, next item here from Clem. Public health data is typically divided by disease or condition rather than integrated with clinical data to show a broader picture across diseases and conditions. Need to encourage, if you go to the next slide, please. There we go. Need to encourage more interaction between the public health and clinical data sets. Because I don't,
It's almost like he's saying the public health, whoever's accessing public health needs the patient's chart rather than just a disease-specific entry.
Oh, to see the full condition? To see any comorbidities?
Yeah.
I can see his point. I mean, I agree, right? And, like, a lab result is irrelevant without the note, right? But,
Yeah, Sunshine, I've heard him say this at another meeting. Since then, that it goes deeper than just, you know, particular patient situation. It's the actual systems. I don't know if he's talking about at the federal level or state level or where, but he's saying that actual systems are dividing the data and they are not sharing, you know, across the public health systems themselves, much less with the clinical side. It was more about like data modernization, more
gotcha.
General.
I just need to know more about this. I mean, I guess I don't, in my mind, I can go like a couple of different directions with this comment. He's not wrong. I think he's right. I don't know what the right answer is for us to look at, because I'm not exactly sure. There's so much variation state to state that I don't know if there's a way at a federal level for us just to recommend something, again, outside of a data class, what we could do with this. I need to learn more.
Maybe we can put this in the think about it for now bucket and listen to the discussion at the PHDS task force meetings and see if we get some elucidation there.
There we go.
We certainly have a number of discussions at that venue.
Yeah, you're right. I like that. Okay. I like that. Let's get more information. Okay. Patient matching, our favorite topic. We've talked about this in multiple annual reports here. Alignment of incentives and certification programs to encourage an ecosystem-based approach rather than the government mandate to better match EHR and public health data. Aaron and Les. So, yes. I mean, I think we did this last year, too. So, I ecosystem-based approach. That is an interesting word, though.
Everything is an ecosystem right now.
Right, I know. That or platform. Ecosystem or platform are the buzzwords this year. Okay. I think this is a topic for the report. I think we have language from previous years that we focus on that high tech is blessed that speak to this and the discrepancy without it. I don't think it's an issue. I think we just sort of tag on and add to last year's comments about patient a unique patient identifier for all domains, not just public health, for everything. It's an issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Health equity. Expand health equity phrase to explicitly include healthcare. Track and share health information and track health and healthcare equity initiatives. Stephen, I agree, but.
This is another one elucidated in the public health data systems meetings. We haven't gotten that far yet, but he's a member of that task force, and I'm guessing we'll hear more about it.
Okay. So we'll listen. Let's listen and learn, right? And get more information of where specifically. I don't disagree with him. I think we need to, and I think we should have health equity by design. I'm a big proponent for that. I think it's the right thing, and we've got to balance, you know, care at the right place, right time. I want to make sure we understand where Stephen is coming from. So that's a good point. Okay. All right, we'll learn more. Yeah,
because if you're expanding that phrase, what are you expanding it from? Is there something
right.
you're referencing there?
Right.
Already?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But he's not wrong. So I just want to learn more where he's coming, like what specifically he's talking
100%.
About. So. All right. Next one, safety and impact of mobile health applications. Should there be an ISA section for app ranking and consumer reports for apps? Yes, there should be, Terry. let's see. Patient access to information. I like that. I feel like we've talked about that before, though, in prior HITACs about the Better Business Bureau for, like, apps. Like, who's going to, like, vet these things, right? Like, we talked about the chapel. We talked about a number of different places to document that. But I think it's fair. But I know the FDA is working on stuff, too. So I don't know where the overlap is. Thoughts?
I was going to say, do you think this should be, like, a subsection? Because you've got digital therapeutics that the FDA does speak to and mm-hmm. does approve or not approve. I think, would you agree that Terry was talking more about just going to, say, the App Store and finding an app that would track my periods or my headaches or something like that? And if they're safe or based on evidence and things, they don't go to the FDA for approval. They're not prescribed. Do we need to better define what is the safety and impact of mobile health applications, not digital therapies, like specifically call that out since there already is a pathway for those?
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Like wellness apps, help you sleep, things like that.
Yeah.
As I look, is this more like in the privacy and security area, I think, rather than access?
It could be, although I do remember Terry talking about patient safety and the efficacy of some of these things when they come to us. I remember him saying that.
Yeah.
But you're right. It could be also, Carolyn, it could be. So maybe we can go back and get some clarification. And then I honestly don't know what all the other agencies are doing. Surely we can't be the only group thinking about how do we vet this. I realize it's colossal, and I know the default, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, is let the covered entities deal with it. But you know, there's got to be some sort of adjudication board of some sort. So is that the FDA? I don't know. Maybe there needs to be, you know, some detailed discussion at the HITACs about this. So we learn more.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Could we get a presentation sometime this year on from the FDA on what they do have oversight over?
Yeah.
And perhaps we would learn more.
It doesn't seem like an FTC, DOJ kind of thing, or OCR. It's an issue in search of an agency.
So create, put some alphabet letters together and create one, Carolyn. We're good. Come on. It's just, you know.
Is this the creative writing part of the annual?
There you go. Brainstorm. All right. Public health data systems ensure, this one's from Christina, who, you know, let's see. Ensure public health discussions consider future needs beyond COVID. 19. I remember her saying this. Yeah, I agree. I want to get the basics electronically transmitted. I'm tired of fax machines. So yes, but I would say this is like tabled for the future comments. We focus on the here and now, what we can do. But she's right.
She's right, and then I think after those comments we just talked about on the first page that happened in January, there's a lot of emphasis and concern about the public health data systems and networks. I think it's being addressed, unless you think she specifically means something else.
No, I think that's covered under the comments we've had at the public health data systems meeting where people have talked about the importance to plan not just for pandemics and COVID, but for all the other stuff that has to happen day to day that also has been hampered by funding systems, et cetera.
Okay. All right. So I think we have a plan there, which is just to note that it's important that we keep talking through at the public health meetings. Interoperability across the care continuum. So are new federal requirements like the CMS Condition Participation Notification, basically ADT, that are helping to address gaps, interoperability, from you, Brett. What were you saying, Brett?
It was just more of a question, you know, than anything. Sometimes I think the legislation trails where we are clinically, and then sometimes I think it's reversed. I mean, the new ADT notification thing is just a nightmare for my providers in primary care. It's providing no benefit for a care manager or an ACO or something like that. Yeah, it's probably giving them some help, but we didn't think through that. So for those gaps are that exist now, it's maybe patient matching. Who's looking at that and the federal record? Like, are we? I don't know. It was more of a question about process, I think, than anything. And maybe there's not an answer to that. That Congress passes a law and that's the process, and then we figure it out after that. Can we get ahead of that? Can we, as part of the annual report, can we make recommendations when we see gaps, like pass legislation that states this or that helps address? I don't know. It sometimes seems like the cart gets before the horse, and then you end up with a mess trying to sort through it. Which then,
Brent, welcome to Washington, D.C. Welcome to Washington, D.C., sir.
Yes, sir. I think that's where that came from. But good golly, guys, that was almost a year ago. I can't remember what I had for lunch.
Yeah. Okay, so do we want to just kind of table that one then, Brett, if you're good with?
100%. I'm not even sure it's an issue. It's maybe more of a comment than something we need to address.
Okay. All right. Closed-loop referrals, addressing closed-loop referrals, including referrals to community-based organizations. Addressing closed-loop referrals. What is she referring to here? Just a narrow network? Is that what she's focused on?
Well, in my context, it would be I refer somebody to, say, a community food bank, and then I get feedback back to close the loop that I know the patient got the food, or I refer them for medical assistance. And when you're outside of your system, your healthcare system or your office, that closing that loop is a challenge to know that it's done.
And it could also be more more direct in the sense that maybe you refer your patient to the senior center for classes and stretching or strength training, and then you kind of want to know, does the person attending, you know, does it seem like they're able to follow along?
Yeah, or even, status update, exactly.
Yeah, and I honestly don't know. Yeah, I don't know what work's going on in this field. Like, I mean, I don't know that, I mean, there's systems out there that do that, right? There's CMS kind of systems that are there that leverage APIs, but they have to be set up that way.
I wonder if I could piggyback on the prior authorization discussion, because there's a lot of closing the referral loop with the PAs, a similar system or structure could be addressing it there. I don't know.
I like that. Yeah. Authorizations and our closed loop referrals. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I need to learn more. I don't know what the community is doing to develop on this. It's work. I know there's work going on, but it's definitely nascent. Carolyn, you good with that? We kind of add as part of the prior auth discussion and kind of look at it in totality?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, it's also a connection to access to care in the sense that, you know, in some communities, the resources that people need or the option for accessing something is not part of the sort of standard healthcare system. It's, you know, piecemeal here and there, like you say, food bank to address food insecurity or initiatives through rec centers or senior centers, you know, for some other needs people have.
Yep. You're right. Okay. Next item is mine, is an emerging issue with robotics. At some point, we do need to start talking about and at least opening the door on this, at least in my humble opinion. I'm hearing more and more inquiries around drone utilization, particularly for supply runs, particularly after COVID, and just the immediacy of it, right? And so obviously the FAA has been involved in helping to really help that. You see a lot of health organizations now doing that for labs and everything else. I mean, it still gives me kind of heartburn a little bit, like what happens if the thing crashes. But, I mean, I think robotics in general, there's a lot of need for that, and there's a lot of growth. So it's a very much a market that's growing fast. You know, Da Vinci's aside, which we've been used for years now, like just fully autonomous machines, medication restocking, all sorts of things. This is a topic we should broach, y'all.
Yeah, maybe current state.
Yeah, just learn. Let's
landscape
talk about
analysis.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think privacy and security piece with that as well.
Yeah, that's true. That is true, particularly in pediatrics. I had to deal with this in pediatrics. Carolyn, what do you think?
Yep, go for it.
Okay. Next slide, please. All right. Oh, electronic lab reporting. APHL and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have developed FHIR-based apps that integrate with EHRs to provide, electronic reporting to public health agencies. This was ECR, yeah, right here. Yeah, so ELR and ECR, yep, this is exactly, so yes. I think we talked about this already, but yes. This is, you know.
It's interesting that ONC suggested that one. Federal government keeps suggesting it. It's the state governments that can't follow through. We'd love
okay.
it. We would love to do it. It would save us 30 minutes of COVID patient just for that.
I begged. I tried. I mean, I haven't said it in the last public health hearing. Like, I tried, and Stephen Lane even tried to help me. We brought the CDC to the EMR vendors, and the EMR vendors like, no. I don't know what else to do. I mean, I tried.
We had it through the, I mean, we had it epic. We had it built. I mean, it was a concerted effort. It took us 10, 12 weeks of team time and then got to the point where Kentucky couldn't accept it. Their software vendor wasn't up to date.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my gosh. You know, it would be nice to know at the front end before we put all this effort into it. Oh, but we'll get it. It'll probably be 6 or 8 months, but we'll get it. Great.
That's great.
30 COVID patients in the hospital now. Not 400. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Just in time for something else. Okay, so ECR is on the list. I mean, I don't think that's a surprise. All right, other potential topics to based on research. All right, information exchange to facilitate the care and monitoring of patients with long COVID. I think these are COVID, maybe post-COVID symptoms. People who are, because we have post-COVID clinics, we have one, for people that had long-term suffering of symptoms. So some patients, who've had COVID, diverse spectrum of symptoms for prolonged period after they were, I think it's diagnosed. And how will the longitudinal data be handled across settings for these cases? I think this is huge. I think this is a major issue. And I think we're underreporting it because hospitals are so used to documenting what conditions are present when you show up versus the full spectrum of conditions that could be there. And I think we're just now learning how complex some of these patients are. We'll see it, right? It's almost you're going to end up seeing second opinion clinics for specifically for COVID pop up everywhere because people are going to have issues for a long, long time after the fact. So I think, yes, this should be on there just because of the immediacy of it. Brett, what do you think? As a physician, what do you think?
Yeah, my only hesitation is right now, how is long COVID defined? And you can get variations and definitions, so you throw everything in the kitchen sink in there and say, well, it could be. I just think it's such a nebulous thing right now. I mean, yeah, there's probably some standard out there, and if it is, that's fine. I'm fine with it, but that would be my only hesitation would be, do we have a strong, agreed-upon definition for what defines long COVID? I had COVID in December. I still don't smell just right, and I don't mean because I didn't bathe. I just have intermittent problems with my smell. Is that long COVID? I'm working out as hard as I want to. I don't know. By definition, perhaps, because it's been 6 months, I still have a symptom. So maybe that's just an argument that it is important because there's so much variability. Until we get it defined, we need to have good information exchange to better define it.
I'll find the definition. There is work around that and some efforts to make it smaller than kitchen sink and the kitchen that the sink lives in. I'll find it.
Fair. Okay. How is that not being exchanged now? I guess how is that different than any other disease state that will emerge?
Well, is there an ICD code? Is there an ICD code for long COVID? I don't know.
Hold
I don't
on,
think there is.
Hold on, I'll check and see.
Yeah, I don't think there is. I don't remember seeing one unless it's come out recently.
My understanding is that, roughly speaking, the difference between long COVID and other things that tend to exist over a period of time is that with long COVID, there are no specific defining criteria. Like, you know, if you have a blood pressure that's in a certain range, that defines you as being hypertensive. And if it exists for a certain period of time, then you have high blood pressure. It's not like during a certain office visit your blood pressure was too high. It's like you are a person who has hypertension. Whereas with COVID, with long COVID, they don't have specific presentations that are always there, symptoms, and the time and the progression is not the same. You know, it's not known. You could start with anything and progress through things that had never been seen or experience things in different combinations than other people. You know, it's not sort of like COPD where you can understand that at the start you're seeing this and then the person has this kind of a decrease in lung function and then maybe you see these changes in structure in the lungs. You know, it's not a very well-defined progression, and there's not necessarily a way to predict how long somebody's going to be in it.
There is a post-COVID syndrome, post-COVID-19 syndrome, ICD-10 code. And then there's some symptom specific, like persistent fatigue, persistent shortness of breath after COVID. That's not the definition, but there are some ICD-10 codes. B94.8 is post-COVID syndrome. Anyway, just FYI.
Yeah, good to know. Okay, interesting. I guess, yeah, we just need to learn a little bit more here. So this would be interesting to know. Especially in the public health discussion, maybe we can talk about this in our public health committee, Carolyn, since you chair it. If there's perspective on this, that'd be good to know.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point we are really stretching it to try to get through laid out in front of us, but certainly it can come up in the comments or
yeah, in the comments.
It can be added to the homework in the doc that people are editing in and developing for the recommendations.
Yeah, that I like that, right? Cause that'll give us a sample size of what folks think. Okay. All right, so we'll focus it there. Public health data systems. The federal government has allocated funding to improve existing public health data systems. What the topic? I don't. I guess the question on this one is, I don't understand what they're asking here.
Yeah, I think this one, looking at it again out of context, I knew more when it was written up, and I would have to go back to notes, but it might just be something like a placeholder to track to see if there are things that we the high tech, need to point out to the federal government that there's still a gap in what's getting funded for it. And we had the phrasing data modernization, which I think some people are moving away from that phrase, so it's sort of in transition. So I think this might be a placeholder because it keeps evolving what it's meant.
Okay.
By it.
Okay, that's fine. All right, let's just watch this then. We'll watch this space and see what happens. Yeah. Okay. Next one, public health workforce. Public health departments struggle to attract, train, and retain public health. This is true. Skills in informatics, data science, and health IT. I think this is super duper important, and obviously the administration is throwing a ton of money at it for the right reasons, the right thing to do. So my answer is yes, this should be in there. What do you all think?
Yeah, no argument for me.
Yeah,
I think we'd have less problems now if we had those folks already in place.
Agreed. I feel bad for public health departments. I really do. I mean, they just stretch to the limit. And it's just ridiculous. So, yeah. Kellen, what do you think?
I agree.
All right. Next one, then. Algorithm bias. The FTC and agency and ARC are undertaking efforts to better understand and reduce racial and ethnic bias in algorithms. I think this is important. And in fact, even as we have done stuff here in Austin, looking at how we collect data, we've realized that the choices that are there in drop-downs and what people select is just atrocious. And when you start looking at it from a different lens, you know, and really try to take the being very equitable, it's true. And there's, you know, I think we've talked about this in some of the USCDI calls and things like that. It's just we've got to modernize our standards to be more inclusive for all. I think this is important.
Yeah, could we even include, go beyond racial and ethnic? I mean, I think when you look at where most of the AI algorithms, the data comes from, it's the West Coast and New York.
Like, yep.
There's a lot of us in the middle of the country that aren't represented, whether you're Black, Hispanic, poor, rich, you know what I mean? It's
good point.
I might just suggest that we expand it more broadly, but I'm fine with, I'm certainly in agreement with
that. Yeah. So I would say maybe reduce any kind of bias in any data class algorithm, right? Any of them.
Yep.
Yeah. I think this is really important. Good. Next slide. Outcomes of the STAR HIE cooperative agreements. Oh, yeah, these are the five programs. The HIE work with.
Aaron, before we dig in, can I point out something? From here on down is the list of, we did this last year too, where they're less in depth. They're things that may not turn into recommendations. They may just be updates to the landscape analysis. So a little more factual. They tend to be placeholder items that mean we need to go back and update or add to our landscape analysis, but there might not be gaps identified or recommendations that come out of these. So this list you might be able to review fairly quickly, which is what happened last year. So you
okay,
have,
that's fine.
But if there is something to bring up to the earlier list, let me know so we can start building that into the next phase of the crosswalk.
Got it. Okay. So if these are updates, maybe then also in the status or notes, Michelle, we could just put potential update or something to note to us that this is just informational, like, you know, maybe something specific on it we want to talk about, but at least, you know, we'll break it out quickly in discussion.
Yeah, I do have a note at the top of the page. I don't know if you can see it.
Okay, so all of these are informational. Okay, all right.
Yeah, so for everything, yeah, so the next several pages are all the same category like that.
Okay.
And then they're grouped within that by, like, things that are new. So those will take a little bit of discussion. And then things that are carrying over from last year is most of the rest of the list.
Okie doke. All right. So we got the STAR HIE Cooperative. We have information blocking applicability to date. We got the OIG blocking enforcement final rule. This is a placeholder. We got Project USA, I believe, is how you say it. For addresses, healthcare addresses, home addresses in healthcare. And then, of course, the CARES Act changes of 42 CFR Part 2. Right, those are all important. I think the only one on this one for me that stands out is the CFR Part 2 changes. And what I've noticed is that a lot of EMR vendors and other major certified vendors are not acting as fast to help, especially when you want to release a note or those kinds of things related to certain elements of this. There's some tie back to the information blocking applicability date. So just something to consider. I don't know. I don't know if that's a topic for us to recommend, but there needs to be some sort of harmonization you know, between some of this stuff, substance abuse, mental health notes, psychotherapy notes, all that stuff. Brett, what are you saying?
So give me more detail as to what you're talking about. I'm not following.
Well, an example, like, you know, for information blocking, you can actually hold back an element of the note or anything, especially a psychotherapy note, if there's potential patient harm, right? So if I put out there something severe. But the problem is that granular level of delay release is sort of an all or nothing right now. And so certain vendors are not giving the flexibility to the providers to make the call on that, right? So that sort of thing. And the reason why was because for some time you had to get explicit consent. I mean, all this stuff. So they haven't, I'll call it update, to catch up with the new regulation. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, even Epic, which I would consider, you know, not necessarily gold standard in everything, but staying ahead on some of these things, we were down to the last minute. We actually had the functionality live for about 10 days prior to April 5th to be able to hold back a note based on that particular parameter. So I can imagine a lot of the smaller vendors haven't kept up. Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
I'll do that. Yep. So I would say, Michelle and team, that I think it's just as a general update, you know, under your information blocking applicability date is, you know, what's the state of the industry? Because a lot of folks are saying, well, I have until 2022. I don't need to do anything, which is literally the answer I've gotten. And our chief medical officer detonated on a specific vendor when they told them not appropriately. So I think there's a landscape of what does 2022 actually mean and how are we going to get everybody to the right place quickly? That would be the update there. Carolyn, anything you want to say on those five topics?
No, I don't think so. We're familiar with this stuff. I think we're good.
Yep. Next list. All right. So FY20 annual report topics to carry over. Let's see. TEFCA, I think it's obvious. Burden reduction, I think that's obvious. HHS certification program, EHR reporting program, HIPAA, which I think we just need to update because the HIPAA new final rule, whatever they're calling it, HIPAA 2, whatever. I've heard so many acronyms. We probably need to update that component. So whatever happens, that happens there. Bidirectional exchange for clinical administrative data for public health, I think we've spoken about. And then the private security public health purposes we've alluded to, but I think this is important and will come up in the public health discussion. It already has in the public health work group discussion. So I think this list is fine as it stands. You all?
Yes.
Okay, next. All right, more public health stuff from our report. Questions arose about how various public health might be monitored in unimmunized populations, obtaining vaccines. Yeah, exactly. So we talked about that. So that needs to be just kind of merged with the other public health topic. Patient matching again for public health purposes, yes, but I think that's already carried over in the other grouping. International exchange of clinical data for public health purposes. I think that's important in high tech. I remember Ben saying that felt that was important, particularly for people that are traveling. Health information exchange, yep, that's important. And exchange across the care continuum, which is exactly what Carolyn was speaking to a minute ago with long-term care.
Yeah, I think what's the complications with the international exchange are different countries, both culture and laws on what can and cannot be exchanged. You know, like STD labs, like you're not exchanging that in the Arab nations. I sit on the Care Everywhere Governance Council with Epic, and they've got Epic clients in Dubai, and what they are able to exchange is very different. So it gets pretty darn complex. Seems like it would make sense, just exchange immunizations, no big deal, or whatever it might be, but anyway.
Wow. Okay. So this list looks good. So Michelle, all I would do is recommend we just collapse certain ones here that we've already talked about into those other groupings so we're not duplicating work. But these topics are germane.
Right.
Okay. Carol, anything to add?
I don't think so.
All right. Next slide. Okay. Association between EHRs and patient safety. Obviously, exchange of SBOH, which, yes, increase health equity access, health equity across populations, locations, and situations. Yes. Information exchange for research, which got a lot of good discussion behind tech, definitely. management data from outside sources. Yes. Health IT support for opioid response. Absolutely. Beyond HIPAA. Yes. Patient consent beyond HIPAA. Yes. And then beyond HIPAA, Internet of Things. Yes. I mean, all this is still germane.
So here's a thought. Opioid response, should we be thinking about moving that to the public health area? Because I've been reading about how, with all the emphasis on COVID, kind of the work has slowed down or stopped on opioids and how that's an emerging problem because of where people, you know, what people have been through in the last 18 months-ish.
I think it's a great point. I think it's a great point. Yeah, we just went live with our large statewide opioid syndromic surveillance tracking system. It took us, you know, 24 months to build. And it's really to make sure we distribute Narcan to the areas that need it most, right? I mean, that's the step one. And then sort of link it all together. And it's a mess. It's a mess linking EMS with hospital data, with county records and vital statistics. It's a mess just in Texas. So I think it's a very fair point, Carolyn.
Cool.
Cool. All right. Next slide. All right. Cybersecurity events across the healthcare system. Yeah, it's just getting worse. That really needs to be part of the report. I think ransomware and others, it's just getting worse, and the dollars are going up. And then safety and impact of mobile health applications, sharing and correcting of incorrect clinical data, and then the use and use and sharing of PGHD, patient-generated health data. So all this stuff is important. Although I could say the sharing and correcting incorrect clinical data, you could incorporate it as part of information blocking. That is one of the benefits that people now see their full note, full chart, and they can come back and go, what is this? And debate you.
Well, but it goes beyond that. So what's my responsibility as a provider? I get a CBC on you, Aaron, and it's got certain values. Now it's shuttled off to you or whoever because of information sharing and interoperability. And then to come find out there was something wrong with the calibration of that machine, and mm-hmm. 72 hours later, we administer another report. Well, how do we get what's already gone out of our system? What's our obligation to send notification? That's a simple one. What if you have a new op report or a new path report that then, again, you're basing information or you're basing medical decisions on downstream? What are your obligations? So it's
that's
not just not
really
releasing information. It's what you've released. What obligation do you have to make sure who got it? Do I have to tell them? Is it, well, it was just literally your MCV was off by 0.2 of a point. There's no clinical significance to that. Who determines that? I mean, it gets pretty hairy.
No, it actually is a personal story. I'm thinking of my own personal data. They made a mistake on me doing my annual blood work. They literally came back to values. It looked like I had fatty liver disease. And so my primary care doctor goes, well, Aaron, you don't look like you've been hitting the bottle every single day for, you know, months and months and months and months. I'm like, what in the world? So it was a complete goof up. It was a miscalibrated system and just total goof up. And so they reran it again. Right. Like, oh, yeah, you're fine. I'm like, yeah. So
your insurance company's got an API that gathers that information, and the next time your premium goes up when it's not accurate, what's the correction process?
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. So I would say that goes back to, okay, so sharing and correcting incorrect clinical data, and then the obligation on both the provider and the continuum to accept those corrected data elements and sets, right? And what does that mean for the patient? So, yeah, makes sense to me. But to the point of it, it is an important topic. So I think right on. Okay. Carolyn, anything to add?
I'm good with that.
All right. I think that's the last slide. So I think, what are we back to the agenda now, please? There we go. All right. Next steps. Next slide. All right, the next steps are continue discussion of the draft list on June 22nd, present the draft list of potential topics for discussion on high-tech meeting on the 14th, develop the draft crosswalk, topics of gaps, and then we'll present the draft crosswalk for discussion of the high-tech meeting on the 9th of September, which is, again, silly to think. It's right around the corner. It's amazing. Okay, and I think this is the last slide. So before we go to public comment, was there anything, Brett or Carolyn, you want to add real quick? Or do you think
I think when, as we progress through the public health data systems meetings, we should keep an eye out for additional topics or framing the topics that we have on our list already. Because we, obviously, when we came up with a lot of these, we were aware of COVID, but we may be at a point further down the road now where we can frame that a little more tightly or better define various aspects of things.
I like that. Great point. Brett?
I'd love to see added topics and analysis of the legislation that the regulations have been put into play this past year. I don't know if it's our purview or somebody else, but some KPIs for the ADT notifications, some KPIs for information blocking that we could, as a high-tech review, probably not till next year, you know, get a 6-12 months worth of data and just see what is it doing what it's supposed to do, and then we could make recommendations from a technical perspective if it's not.
Yeah, I like that. You know, interesting story, Brett. We actually created another element on the chart so that HIM could track to make sure that if Aaron requested his record to be released, it's immediately released, it's auto-released, or if there was a delay, why was it delayed? Who is the provider that held it back for the reason? And so we could really monitor that on a QA basis to make sure the patient's always getting the information. It's the right thing to do. It adds an extra layer for auditing, but we want that data. But it's not standard. So it's amazing. I wonder how people are generally tracking their compliance rate with, are you releasing the full note? Is a provider have the ability to hold an element back for patient safety purposes? Like what is going on, right? That's interesting. So I agree with you. Is there a way to do KPIs on how things are going? It would be fascinating to see. Cool. All right. Then with that, Mike and team, if you guys are good, we could go to public comment.
We are good. Operator, can we open up the line for public comment?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad, and the tone will indicate that your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we pull for comments.
Okay, and while we're waiting, I just want to note that our next meeting will be on June 22nd, so hope you all can join us once again. Do we have any comments?
There are no public comments.
Thank you.
All right. No public comments then. I think anything you want to say to close out, Brett or Carolyn?
Just excited to be back with you guys working on another report. I think we had a great start today.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Great. All right, y'all. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon. Have a great afternoon. Be safe.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Bye.